time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Drunken Obnoxious Concert Goer.
Mr. Drunken Obnoxious Concert Goer.
Oh, good. Now they can start the show. What would the live music experience be without you completely wasted, stumbling past us to your seat 20 minutes after the concert has started?
There's only one foot you didn't step on.
Awesome. Thanks for the beer shower.
I'll drive home smelling like a six-pack, yeah.
So the next time you see a guy singing songs he doesn't know the words to, while chugging gallons of beer and high-fiving anyone who makes eye contact, wipe his spit off your face and salute Mr. Drunken Obnoxious Concert Goer, a real American hero.
Mr. Drunken Obnoxious Concert Goer.
And stop waving that lighter around before you set someone's mullet on fire.
Get ready for the best morning show on any kind of radio. Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio, get ready for Sam and Kara in the morning. Give Sam and Kara a call at 323-203-0815. And now, here are your hosts, Sam and Kara.
Thank you for joining us on this beautiful Friday morning. Three-day weekend staring us in the face.
High fives all around. High fives on me. Don't worry about it.
High fives?
High fives all
around. Yeah, you walked in here with a high five for me, so I figured you must be in a good mood.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't think you need to have a total special occasion for a high five. You know what's fun?
Mm.
Is if you go up to people and you do special little things with them when there's really nothing special going on,
uh-huh.
It still makes them feel special.
Really?
Yeah, think about it. I gave you a high five. It threw you off.
That's true. It did make me feel special.
It made you feel special.
It made me feel weird. Like, what is she after?
Yeah, give you everything in your pockets. Now, you know, give people some high fives, some thumbs up.
Yeah.
You know, it's really effortless, but it's like,
That's true.
A little bit of effort, but it's pretty, you know, easy to do, and it can make a big difference.
Yeah.
Like high-fiving people, and it makes you feel good.
Yeah. I think the most important thing, though, is to smile. You know, I try to smile a lot to people. Even
really?
People I don't know, if I walk into an elevator or if I walk into a restaurant or a fast food place or a store, whatever, I always smile to people.
That's good. Keep smiling. Yeah. Keep smiling.
Although sometimes I'm really, like, down and I look like I'm ready to kill somebody.
You got that, like, Sam has this look, and it's not necessarily who you are or what you're thinking, but you've got kind of like, if you're not smiling or laughing and people don't know you,
right.
You kind of have, like, a Unabomber look.
Yeah, thank you.
That just negated the high five, huh?
Yeah, fuck that high five, though.
No, but I mean, it's not really Unabomber, but you know, you get like a serious, really serious look.
No, I do.
I know people have told you that before.
Yeah. It's like my lips are pulled down, you know, on the side, so it looks like I'm frowning.
Sometimes when I'm deep in thought and I'm thinking and I'm staring off, people think I'm upset or something. Or because I'm so dialed up to 11 all the time, like I'm all the time, if I happen to be calmer,
right,
it freaks people out.
That's true, yeah, because like, they're accustomed to a certain temperament.
They are like, are you okay, are you sick or something, and I'm like, no, I'm just not, you know, I'm fine. But then people keep asking you and then you start to get irritated. No, I'm not fine.
Yeah,
you guys
get the
back
off.
But no, I was just telling Sam, I was like, and this is for everybody out there, because everybody's living life, doing whatever, you know, you just you come to those bumps in the road, or you come to seasons in your life where everything you want to happen, just the opposite's happening. You know, whether it's finances, professional, romantic, with your family, it's kind of like you get to these places where you're trying to make strides, or you want to see the fruit of your labor, you want to see a door open, you want to see some hope, and it just seems like, you know, it's like a little, somebody took the sand thing and they turned it upside down, and it's like, tick, 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 and you're like, no, it's going to get good, no, it's going to get good, I'm just keeping hope, keeping faith, keeping hope, no, it's going to be good, it's going to be good, it's going to be, you know, and you just get to where you're like, you know, that place of just like, you're like over it, you know, you're over it. You're over yourself. You're over everything. Well, I mean, I was having some of those days this week of just having some of those like, oh, man. You know,
like you feel you're not where you want to be, is that?
I mean, it's just, you know, without going into details on everything because it's just too complicated and there's backstories to stuff. But right. It's just the feeling of like, you know, I've been in a certain season and I'm really ready to progress and move on right. to certain things and many different areas of my life. Anyways, but it's that feeling of you're just exhausted, you know. Mm. And man, I had a couple days where, you know, a couple good cries and good heart to hearts.
Oh, really?
Yeah, a couple good heart to hearts. Well, you think I don't cry?
That's serious.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a release, too. A part of it's just a release of, like, right. you know, kind of getting in touch. Because I think what happens is we're living fast-paced society. We mm-hmm. work a lot. We're constantly doing things. We're constantly filling up the day planner or whatever. And we're kind of, I think, shutting down or ignoring what we're feeling, you know, deep down. Mm. And I'm not saying be self-indulgent with your emotions, but I am saying that, you know, if you're feeling something and you keep ignoring it, it's for a reason. There's something there that you need to explore, you know?
Right.
So it's kind of like getting still enough to kind of go, why is there aggravation? Why is there frustration? Why is there, you know, this, and this, you know? And you just kind of like peel back the onion, so to speak, and
right.
find out what's going on. So I kind of had a few days like that this week, kind of just going, okay, I'm on autopilot and things aren't happening. I need to just be still. Which brings me to a Bible verse that says, be still and know that I am God. It's pretty profound to just be still somewhere mm-hmm. and just reflect on God and the profoundness of how big God is and how little we are. Just kind of puts things in perspective, you know?
Right.
So anyway, I woke up this morning and I was just laying in bed and the sunshine was like blaring in my face. I was like, okay, fine, I'm up, fine, sunshine. You know, just it's like piercing my eyelids, you know? So I was just laying there in my bed and I just started thinking about how pretty it was outside and then I started inhaling just because that's what you do, you breathe. So this part isn't profound. But inhale, exhale, inhale, and then your heart's beating, and you're like, you know, I'm still alive, and I didn't even choose to still be alive, but I'm still alive, like my body's involuntarily.
So you're grateful.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, those little microscopic things about how your body just functions, mm-hmm. and it's all in God's hands.
Right.
The what makes a heartbeat beat is in God's hand. What makes magnetic forces magnetic is in God's hands. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What makes energy energy? You know what I mean? It's the movement, and even though we know we understand some of the hows and the whys and the this and the that, what makes it all there in the first place is God, and the fact that we wake up every morning and our bodies are still like beating, you know. I mean, it's weird because you're like, oh yeah, that's just science, but then you stop and go, wait a minute, my heartbeat's still beating, and some people die in their sleep.
Yeah, they do.
Anyway,
people die every possible way.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Just that sense of
yeah, you're being grateful.
Every day we're living
in awe.
Yeah, every that's day we live, I feel God still has a purpose for our life.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's good. I mean, that helps when you believe that. No, absolutely.
What do you think?
I believe that as well, believe it or not.
I believe that as well, believe it or not. Believe
there
it or not.
Go.
I do believe it. I believe that you believe it.
Yeah.
You know, because it's interesting.
No, I'm grateful. I think about these things all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. How things keep going and life and death and...
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're right, you know, and what's weird is when you go to sleep and then you're, like, totally somewhere else, and mm-hmm. then, you know, I mean, all it is, it takes a little noise and you wake up and you're back, you
yeah.
know, so that's a fascinating thing for me and how the body sort of, like, tones its activity down while you're sleeping, you know?
I know, huh?
So it's amazing, but what amazes me is how we are aware and we don't fall off the bed. We don't pee in bed, you know, things like that.
Speak for yourself.
So, you know, all that is fascinating.
Yeah, your body's done. Your body's like, I need to rejuvenate.
Right.
Regenerate.
But we're still able to control ourselves while we're sleeping. That's what I'm saying, you know. So that's a pretty profound thing, I think.
Well, some people roll off the bed. Some people are sleepwalkers. And some people do pee the bed. You know that.
Yeah, but it's not the majority, okay? Some people do everything and anything.
That's true. That is really true. Yeah. Well, I just think, you know, encouragement to everybody out there, because I just think it's important to kind of, you know, and I say that still going through stuff right now, but I say it looking at, okay, you know, take things from the biggest, like the mess that you're in or the stress that you're in or the confusion that you're in, and just kind of boil it down to nothing and go, well, what do I have? What is there left in me? What is, and kind of find where is God in all of it? And I think that brings a lot of hope. And, you know, and I say that not fully, you know, I mean, I'm still struggling with a lot of stuff, but I still say that going, you know, there's a season for things. There's going to be a time where things lift, and there's transitions, and then there's, you know, there's the mountaintops and there's the valleys of life. And, you know, the cool thing to know is that God is there through all of it, you know,
right.
And he's teaching us something through all of it. And I think most of the work is done through the pain and through the I don't knows of life. I think that's where most of the character building is done. I think God brings us through a lot of struggles and tragedies and just the mundane things of life where we don't necessarily feel his presence all the time, or we're not exactly excited all the time. But I think through those periods is where you really learn, you know, perseverance, endurance, patience, love. And it, because it's, you know, that faith isn't really a feeling, you know, it can encompass a feeling, but it's not really a feeling. It's really voyaging in a belief that you know in your heart of hearts is there, but you can't see, feel, taste, touch, or smell it. And then you kind of get to the other side, and then it feels like you experience the emotion that comes with it. But it's through that valley of those, you know, the valleys of life where faith is really refined and built up and tested, because that's really living by faith. You
so
know?
Does that help you deal with your tribulations?
My tribulations? My horrible life. I got a great life. No, yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, on a personal level, I feel like I'm being constantly stretched.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm constantly being challenged and way more than I ever thought I would be. You know, mm-hmm. And I'm sure everyone has those experiences. I know it's not just me, but it's where, you know, you have decisions that you can either do it the hard way. You could do it the easy way,
mm-hmm.
or you can do it the way that you know is right, but it's going to require more than you ever wanted to give and more sacrifice than you ever thought you were going to give.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Well, what you said.
You don't, it doesn't resonate with you?
No. I mean, it's fine. It's just that it's all this Bible talk in the morning makes my head spin. But,
well, I mean,
but
you know,
I can
break,
understand
you
what
understand
you're
it. It's the idea of, like, you come to two paths. You come to two paths, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that looks like is for other people. And you can either go down a path that will get you there quicker
mm-hmm.
and will maybe feel better or be easier or more fun or mm-hmm. or less sacrifice, right? But you're sacrificing if you do go down that path, because maybe you're not growing emotionally or interpersonally or in your faith or with your friends if you take the easy road, is what I'm saying. And
right,
then sometimes
right.
you're like, damn, if I want to do this the right way and do it what I believe is God's way, it's like stretches you to a point of having to believe and having to say no to things or say, you know what I mean? There's
mm-hmm.
a sacrifice involved, but the greater gain is that, you know, it's not necessarily flashy or sexy, but it's like character development. It's
mm-hmm.
it's more like a life that's more significant versus recognition from the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
No, not really. You know,
oh, no?
I mean, it's like you're talking, but I don't understand what you're saying.
Well,
but it's
like,
okay, because you're meandering a little bit. And
well,
stuff.
You know, well, okay, maybe fine. I am. But you know, like the Robert Frost, the road less traveled.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Robert Frost?
Yeah, I don't know who it is.
You know the concept of you got two choices, pill A, pill B.
Okay.
Okay. So
the
I'm
blue pill or the red pill.
There you go.
Okay.
And let's say one's a feel-good pill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if you take it, it's going to feel good and you're going to get where you want to get quicker. But what you don't get when you take that pill is the deeper things that in
mm-hmm.
your heart and the deeper things in your spirit. Let's say there's things behind the scenes that aren't developed if you take that pill.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then the other pill is like, it's not fun, it doesn't feel good, but the things that need to really come to fruition in your spirit, your heart, your character development.
Yeah.
Those things.
Well, that's the balance in life, you know? I mean, you're going to get the good and the bad. What are you going to do, you know?
Yeah, but I'm just saying, you know, you come to these places in your life where you have to make decisions, and I mean, if I were to take it and break it down for somebody else, let's not make it so spiritual as far as the verbiage. It's just like career,
mm-hmm.
right? Some people in Hollywood, they can sleep their way to the top,
mm-hmm.
okay? They can casting couch, they can, you know, I've actually had, I mean, and oddly, so weird, but I've actually had circumstances where I was kind of seeing somebody, and if I were to continue a relationship with this person, I know that my certain things in my career would have already been taken off,
mm.
okay?
Okay.
But here's the thing, you know, a lot of people that do that, that maybe they do it intentionally, and they set out to just you know, be with those type of people, or they find themselves in relationships that can further their career, whichever. A lot of times there's consequences to that. You know, they get to the top quickly, but then they don't sustain. They don't really stay there long. It's like they fuse out quickly, or they get there and it's always tainted by the fact that people think they're only there because of this person.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
and they're not really taking serious in the industry or whatever. Or you can do your career the other way, which is blood, sweat and tears, work on your craft, you know, keep at it, perseverance. And, you know, it may or may not break for you one day, but it's going to be through the legitimate reasons.
Well, it depends on what kind of person you are. You know, I mean, some people want to take the easy way and they do, you know, so what are you going to do? We're going to call our guest. We have an author who wrote a book on childhood traumas. And we're going to call him. His name is James Krabiel, I think. Krabiel. And we're going to find out from him what the name is. And this sounded interesting. So hopefully we'll get a hold of him today. We tried him a few times in the past. And
good morning. James Krabiel speaking.
Good morning, James. Sam and Kara in L.A. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. We finally get to hear your voice after so many attempts.
Yes. We did it.
Yeah, I know. So I understand we're calling you in Arizona. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, I'm in Scottsdale.
I see. Is that where you
live?
So
I'm close by.
Yeah, yeah. How long have you lived there in Scottsdale?
We've been here for 14 years. I'm originally from Chicago.
Oh, okay.
And grew up in the suburbs of Chicago and moved here. Moved here about 15 years ago.
Wow, quite a change from Chicago to Arizona, let me tell you.
Oh, yes. Yeah, difference in weather and difference in ideology.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you could say that. So, James, you're, I understand you're a professional counselor, and you're also a cognitive behavioral therapist. Can you explain to us a little bit what that is?
Yes. A cognitive behavioral therapist, right now that particular modality is at the forefront of therapies. In other words, what happens is that I work with people's thoughts and belief systems, their core assumptions, you know, what makes them tick. You know, some people say I must avoid conflict at all costs. There's these underlying assumptions. And so I try to ferret out what those are. And then by working with their belief systems and their core assumptions and their thinking, their negative thinking, I'm able to make modifications and help people to rationally respond.
Right.
So the idea is it's very straightforward, very pragmatic. I look at presenting issues, and we walk through them, and I help people to find strategies for thinking more effectively and more positively.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Now, you wrote a book. It's called Troubled Childhood, Triumphant Life, Healing from the Battle Scars of Youth. How did this book come about? James?
Hello?
Yes. Can you hear me?
There was a little catch, and there's an echo, and then I lost you just for a second there.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me well now?
Okay. Now I can hear. Yeah, now you're okay.
Okay. Well,
How did this come about?
Yes, please.
Well, yeah, the book came about is, you know, over the years I've counseled many people who felt stuck as adults, and they kept recreating some of these same worn-out patterns of thinking and behavior that taunted them during childhood. And I started thinking, you know, why do some adults, you know, navigate a troubled childhood successfully, whereas others seem to remain powerless over their past? People would come in with these blank stares, and they'd tell me these really very painful stories. And I began to recognize that there are some ways to deal with this.
Right.
And part of that was through my professional expertise, and part of that was through my own childhood, which was dysfunctional. And I was able to help people to turn those patterns around, and I kind of found a strategy, if you will, for how I could help people do that. And I decided, you know, I need to put this down. I need to write this out for people so that they can see that there is a way out of their perilous past.
Right. And, you know, I can't imagine. I mean, I'm very blessed to have had a rather comfortable childhood. But I know many people, you know, they're living with shame And
I thought you were to say shit.
No. They're living with a lot of shame and hurt and maybe sense of abandonment and betrayal and so forth. So how come some people are able to overcome that and some cannot?
Well, I think that what I have found is that it has to do with the process. You see, a lot of people, they either dwell on their past. They go, oh, poor me, or they ruminate about it. They rehash it over and over again. Or they avoid it. I'll have a lot of people come in, particularly men, and they'll say, it's no big deal. And they may have buried it through intellectualizing or obsessing or self-medicating or whatever they do to try to minimize their pain.
Right.
But what I found is processing the past, when we process it, we experience the impact of what happened to us. It's not just in our head. We have to get it into our heart. We have to understand that really things went wrong, and we need to begin to process that. And part of that processing is grieving it, is letting go of the bitter pill that when I was a child, my parents were inadequate in terms of being able to meet my needs. They just couldn't do it. They didn't have it to give.
Right.
And so we swallow the bitter pill, and we begin to say, I'm mad about it, I'm upset about it, I'm angry about it, I'm ashamed about it, but that's the first step. And once people begin to grieve their loss, they can begin to start thinking differently about what happened.
Right.
And everything begins to free up and change.
Right. And I can imagine it would be quite difficult since, when you're a child, you don't take things the same way an adult would, and I can imagine it would leave a lot of scars as you grow up.
Exactly. And what happens is, as kids, we tend to take on the blame. We take the rap. Because troubled kids perform to please in order to gain the love and validation of their parents.
Right.
And when it's not forthcoming, when it doesn't happen, typically what they do is they turn their anger on themselves and they make an assumption, and that assumption is, there's something wrong with me. I must be defective.
Right.
And that way they can let their parents off the hook and they minimize the pain. So then, fast forward, we come into adulthood and they begin to believe or continue to believe that there's something wrong with them, that they're defective, that, they should have known better.
Right.
And one of the keys that I found that led me to write this book is, I remember on several occasions I said to adults who would tell me the stories, and I said, it never was about you. And the tears would start to come. And I thought, whoa, okay, what's that all about? Well, what it was about was the fact that they finally realized that it wasn't their fault. It was nothing that they did that made their parents not love them the way they needed to be cared for.
Right.
And so as adults, they began to feel empowered. They began to believe, okay, this was a bad, I used the best coping skills I could as a child.
Right.
But as an adult, I have to learn some new coping skills.
Right. And that's the thing, is that I heard something once that really stayed with me, and that is the walls we build around us as children to protect us become our prison walls when we become adults. And, this is, I think, what you're talking about is carrying all this baggage, all this, shame and blame and so forth with you throughout your life. I can imagine it would pretty much paralyze you, as you try to go about your life.
Yes, it affects everything. It affects relationships. A lot of times we begin to gravitate towards relationships that are similar to a parent.
Mm-hmm.
And what I believe about that is, people will come in and I'll say, what you're trying to do now is you're trying to fix the parent that you could never change.
Right.
And so you keep trying to find someone that's similar to a father or similar to a mother, and it doesn't work because it has nothing to do with how you perform. The other thing is, you know, I'll see people, and it's as if they're like a ball of yarn. Mm. And if you were to pull one strand, they feel as if you were to pull one strand of that ball of yarn out, that the whole, you know, ball of yarn would come unraveled, that they would come unraveled. So you have to be very, very careful and supportive with people, because as you begin to peel away the onion skin, there's some really, really hurtful feelings behind it.
Right, right. And I think that's what it's all about. You know, if it immobilizes you and you can't live your life, I think you should definitely check this out. The book is Troubled Childhood, Triumphant Life, Healing from the Battle Scars of Youth. James, also, I know you have a website. Why don't you go ahead and give it out so people can check out and get more information?
Sure, Sam. The website is scottsdaletherapy.net. And you can find me there, and my work can be purchased at Barnes & Noble's or through Amazon.com.
Right. Wonderful. Well, all the best to you. I know the book came out recently, right, in March?
Yeah, it came out in March.
Right. Well, good for you. Congratulations on the book. And, you know, I think it's got a lot of valuable information for anyone wanting to deal with depression and anxiety and things like that that still haunt them from childhood. So, James, we thank you for spending the time with us. And
thank you so much.
Enlightening us a little bit.
Karen, Sam, thanks so much for having
thank
me on
you.
The show. I appreciate it.
Of course.
Take
all the
care.
Best to
have
you,
a good
James.
Day.
Bye-bye. So, one of the less pleasant topics to talk about, but nevertheless,
you didn't have jacked up childhood, nothing?
Who, me?
Yeah.
No, really. I mean, when I think about it, I had a loving family. I mean, look, everybody's got their own fucking shit, you know, and stuff, you know.
Hit a spell out.
I mean, when I think about it, you know, my parents sent me out here when I was 16. You know, I was by myself, although I stayed with family and stuff. But still, to send your son halfway across the world at 16 is pretty
What was that like for you? Did you know the family?
I mean, to me it was good because I always wanted to come to America, you know. And at 16, you know, you have all these problems with your parents and shit like that. So it was sort of like a good way to just get out, you know.
Yeah.
But I can't say it was traumatic or anything, you know. It's just that I think it's a big thing in my life. And, you know, I mean, I've had to deal with it, with the fact that, you know, maybe it was an abandonment on my parents' part and things like that. But I never viewed it that way, you know.
Yeah.
Because all in all, I'm grateful that I'm here.
Yeah.
And that they sent me out here. So, but I've had my own demons to deal with. But thank goodness, you know, I mean, I've got most of it behind me. So I'm doing well, you know, except I still smoke cigarettes. So maybe I'm not 100% over the stuff. But you know what's scary to me? Did you hear that Michael Douglas has cancer? He's got throat cancer.
No.
And he says he used to smoke a lot and drink a lot. So that really scares me, you know, Kira? Because, I mean, I've been thinking, you know, one day, God forbid, I wake up with cancer or something, and then I'm going to look back and say, were these cigarettes really fucking worth it?
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, I need to do something about this, and I'm seriously thinking of maybe starting to go and work out, you know, cut down on the cigarettes, possibly stop completely and start eating well.
Yeah, I think it's good. I mean, obviously there's no contest against that. Of course it's good, but I mean, just, you know, taking it one step at a time and getting out there and doing it. Yeah. I think you'll love it. It's just those initial steps.
Yeah.
The first steps of anything are always usually hard.
But yeah, the key to it is to change my lifestyle, you know, and rather than sit around and smoke and stuff, I need to do more activities in my life.
Mm.
And I think that's going to take care of it. So we'll see. I mean, we're all, you know, we're all scarred. We all have shit in our lives. Did you have anything that you would consider traumatic? I mean,
well,
you don't have to tell us about it, obviously. But
I mean, a lot of crazy stuff. I usually just make jokes out of it.
Yeah. Your mom, I mean, that would be pretty traumatic,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah, she's nuts. But, I mean, it was really when I was younger. She's nuts.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I mean, I have there's no way for me to not think this stuff is funny. I just,
right.
For me, it is. Not that it didn't affect me seriously, but you look back at it and some things are so pathetic. You're like, that is just so so white trash, you know what I mean? But no, nonetheless, if you're a kid, you don't think it's funny at the time. So, right. I mean, I just always, as a kid, you always want, like, your mom and dad there, and you want them to think you're good and make them proud and have them affirm you. And my mom was always, you know, sedated, basically. She was always on some kind of medication. So she was just like, ugh.
Right.
She'd be in bed all the time. But she's also, like, very manic. So she would have, like, these outbursts of weird, crazy, unexplainable anger. Mm. And then she was just really, 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 like, not normal. Right. And so I would, but as a kid, you don't understand that. You don't know why your mom isn't like everybody else. You don't know why, you know, she's nuts. And everybody else's mom does stuff.
I know. That's
so,
got to be tough, though.
Well, I would wake up in the morning and get, instead, you know, she basically, an alarm would go off that would wake me up, and she wouldn't wake up with us. So it'd be dark, and I'd be getting ready for school, and I was in third grade. Mm. You know, that kind of stuff. Like, a third grader shouldn't be dressing themselves.
Right.
You know, and I wouldn't dress myself well, and I would always try to wear my sister's clothes that were too big. So I'd go to school wearing stuff that didn't fit me. I was just really neglected, and it's not because, it's just because she was always gone. Like, she was always gone. So I'd go to school, and I just remember, like, I just didn't bring a jacket, and I'd be cold all day. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. So she just wasn't there to make sure I was dressed. And then we had career day at school, and we were supposed to dress up as what we wanted to be when we grew up. Well, I always knew I wanted to be a singer, and I sang all the time. Uh-huh. So I went, my mom, again, she's like, she's like, you know, drooling all over her bed. She's sedated, you know, probably a cigarette still lit in her hand. Anyway, I went into her bedroom and into the closet, and I got one of her old, again, she's been married six times. I went and got one of her old wedding dresses that was, like, real sexy.
Yeah.
It was, like, white lace and form-fitting. Again, I think I was, like, 7 or 8 years old.
Really?
And I put this dress on with my tennis shoes and, like, put lipstick on, and I walked to to school.
Really?
In this wedding dress.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm not lying.
Why did you do that?
Because I was going to be a singer, and I needed to look glamorous.
Oh,
and stuff.
I see.
Yeah.
With a bride's dress.
Yeah, but I needed, but it was, like, form-fitting, you know? It looked like an evening gown more.
Right.
And so I'm wearing my mom's dress, right?
Uh-huh.
I'm kind of picking it up so it doesn't drag too much, but it's dragging, it's dirty. I get to school, and it's got a plunging neckline. So, you know, I'm like 7 years old. It's all the way down to my stomach, and my, like, little tummy's out, and it's barely covering my nips, you know. Like, I'm like a 7 year old, you know, so there's nothing going on there yet.
Yeah.
But I'm walking to the teacher, like, took me in the bathroom, and she, like, got all these pins and pinned it for me and stuff.
Oh, really?
You know, but the thing is it does affect me. I mean, it did affect me. There's no way it couldn't, but I feel like God always protected me from realizing how shitty it was, because I was always focused on, like, man, I'm gonna be a singer, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So I wasn't even thinking about the fact that my mom's laid up in bed and that she should have made sure I was okay,
right,
and not half naked wearing a skanky wedding dress.
That's the thing, you know, when you're a child, you don't realize there's something wrong, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I knew some stuff was wrong. I didn't understand why. So she, like, she pinned it and everything, and then I just felt even cooler, though.
Barely.
Yeah, I didn't even think about the fact that I shouldn't have been in it. But no, there was tons of stuff where, like, picture day came, and, you know, all the kids would have their parents, like, do their hair on picture day, and they looked special, and they had a special outfit.
Right.
Well, like, I couldn't get my mom out of the bed to do my damn bangs.
Wow.
So I put on, like, a Christmas dress that was, like, velvet, and it's the middle of, like, spring, so this dress is way out of season.
Oh, God.
And then I tried to curl my own hair, and I didn't know how to do it, so it looked really kinky. It had a bunch of kinks in it.
Mm-hmm.
And normally we ride our bikes to this girl and I would ride our bikes to school. And so I went next door, and I was like, hey, ready to go to picture day to go to school? And her mom comes to the door. She's like, oh, well, I'm going to drive her today because I don't want her to mess up her hair. And I'm just standing there with, like, this big poof of hair in this dress. She's like, did you do your own hair? I was like, yeah. She's like, I could tell. And I remember this. As a kid, I remember her going, I could tell. But she didn't even offer to take me to school. So I drove my bike to school with my frizzed out hair and my Christmas dress.
Uh-huh.
So I was always trying to glam up. You know, I was always looking to do my, I was always trying to glam it up. And
yeah.
My mom just was out to lunch. But you know when, like, parents should be there to pick you up and stuff like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I was not feeling good at school one day, and I went to the nurse, and I was like, yeah, I'm not feeling good. And she's like, I was like, can I call my mom? She goes, you know, why are you going to call your mom? You know she's not going to come get you.
Wow.
She said that.
Really?
Yeah, and it was true. She wouldn't come get me.
Wow.
I would just have to sit there. So there's like tons of stuff like that where yeah. she didn't show up.
And it accumulates and shit, you know? I mean, I yeah. can imagine you grow up and you got all this baggage on you.
I'm so baggage. No, I feel like what... I think there's a lot of ways that things can affect you and ferment. I mean, definitely you have to work through anything in life, but I always look at it like this. There's always somebody that's had it a lot worse than I did.
Right.
I mean, I know people that have been through traumatic right. things. I mean, I know people that were severely molested. I know people that were starved. I know people that were in the system, you know. I mean, I didn't have it like that. I just had a lot of selfish parental people and a lot of kind of neglect more so. Mm-hmm. And I would say more emotionally, some physically, more emotionally, which still affects you. But, you know, the way I look at it, too, is that, you know, you can either make you bitter and resentful or you can actually use it to love people more because it gives you a heart for people.
Right.
It's like I've heard it say, you know, God breaks our hearts in ways that we need to break for other people. So it's like if you've been through situations like, you know what it feels like to be abandoned or you know what it feels like to be alone in a foreign country or whatever.
Right.
It can kind of give you an empathy for somebody, an understanding, and a love for people that are in that situation. It's like
right.
kids that are neglected or something. You know, that really affects me. It really, like if I see a kid that's, you know, they don't have anything. Like the guy I was seeing in Texas, you know, he lives in an apartment complex where there's just a lot of... It's a transitional place that he's living in. He's mm-hmm. moving, but he's living in an area that, I don't know, there's just a lot of low income around there. And mm-hmm. some of the kids in his area, they're home all day. It's a single parent, single mom. They're working, and nobody's watching these kids.
Yeah.
And they're running around, and, you know.
Yeah, that's terrible.
It's really sad. So they call him Mr. D, and they're so freaking cute. They go up to him and they're like, "What are you doing?" He's like, I gotta go to the store. And then one kid goes, "Well, can you buy me some candy? Cause this other kid had this candy. I didn't get any." And, he says, "You want some candy?" And now the guy in Texas has a,
right.
he's a really crazy background with his family. So his heart is just beats for kids like this. Right.
Right.
He goes, "Okay, well," he never just gives him stuff. He's like, "Okay, you guys need to clean this up, clean that up." And he makes him basically clean up the whole community.
Yeah.
But then he comes back and he loads them with candy.
Yeah, that's a good idea, though. Make them earn it.
Well, and teaching them skills. And then also one of the little girls was talking to him and said, "Oh, you know, how they're," he said, "Are you excited that you're starting school?" She goes, "School on Monday." She goes, "No, because we don't have any school supplies."
Yeah.
And her mom couldn't afford any. Her mom's working two jobs. So he went to Target and like got them. He spent $200, got them backpacks, lunch boxes, you know, rulers, everything you need. You know, he spent a lot of money.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And he came back and he gave it to these girls and water bottles, all these things that they need. And the mom was just like, "I didn't know what I was going to do." And she was just so grateful and,
yeah.
you know, and I just think that that's so beautiful. I mean, that just makes me love this man so much. I mean, he just has such a big heart. And,
right.
And for me, it's like, you know, you've heard it said, it takes a community to raise a child. It's like, whether it's right or wrong and people made bad choices or it was done to them by their circumstances or whatever, it's like, you know, kids are kids.
Right.
And it's like, you know, I think if people looked around, there's a lot we could do for people that their parents can't do a lot for them, you know?
Right.
And it's like, what's, I mean, even though it's $200, it's like, it's well spent and it's, you know, money comes and goes and it's like those kids, you know,
yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I just think it's so sweet and that kind of stuff, but
yeah. Okay. Well, I wanted to ask you, do you think that, I guess this thing is like, being bounced around that ladies' night is illegal. Okay, they're questioning the legality of this because what happens is these establishments charge different prices from different customers, and that's illegal. But
I wonder.
So, but my biggest question is, I mean, this is done for business reasons, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think anybody's complaining, especially not the men, when they know there's going to be a lot of women there. So, you know, But that's the thing that, you know, that's the feminism part of things where, you know, they take it too far.
Okay, so I've heard it said this. I've heard guys, not on a legal issue, but I've heard guys complain about this. Like,
right.
It's not even ladies' night. It's because all of L.A., it's like there's a certain time frame that you go and you get into the club. And within that time frame, if you're a woman, you walk right in.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
You know, and then there, the guys have to pay.
Right.
And it's usually like $20 or something,
right.
You know?
Uh-huh.
They pay to come in. And and I've heard guys kind of go, you know, I've heard the guy say it like, it's not fair.
Right.
That you basically trap all these women here, and then for us to get to them, we have to pay. Like, it's like using women in a
right,
way.
Right.
And I don't know. I'm happy.
Not only using women, but using men as well, you know? I mean,
yeah.
You know, using something like that to draw them into the establishment. But at the same time, the men probably wouldn't go there if there weren't women, because usually there are less women in a club for some reason. I don't know why.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, that's why they do it, right?
I don't know. I think that there's a lot of women in the clubs, but I guess if the women had to pay, there wouldn't be. Cause
that's what I'm saying.
I mean, I think it's really offensive if I go someplace and they charge women. I feel like, because I understand the game, you need women there. You need pretty
right,
women there. So
right.
If they're like, oh, we're charging, well,
but why would you be offended by it? I mean, for crying out loud, you know, you go to a place, you have to pay.
Well, it's the kind of place, I mean, you're going to dance and it's marketing for them. Like, they want a line outside their club, and then they want there to be attractive women. That's
right.
The draw. I mean, people aren't just going to go be in a damn building, no matter how pretty the building is, if there aren't fun people there.
Right.
People aren't going to go. So you're doing them a service by being there.
Right.
So as a woman, yeah. I've a friend of mine, we were in Hollywood a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And we walked up to one of the, it was back when before this, you remember there's a club that burnt down in Hollywood. Anyway, we went up to this club and it was a last minute thing. We're like, hey, like we were going to go in. And the guy was going to charge us. And we were like, oh, not going to happen. Sorry. Because you don't have to get charged as a woman. There's so many places you could just go. So we left and then we were about to leave. And they're like, oh, no, come on in.
Really?
Yeah, because they need women in.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So
yeah, so,
know, so there's got to be less
women. But is it
women.
Illegal? Like, is it something that you...
You know, I mean, you're charging different prices, different people. That's illegal.
Yeah, I can see there being an
but,
issue.
But you know,
there.
But I think they're taking this too far. You know, it's a business. How can you tell a business what to do if they feel that they don't get enough customers? Then you do whatever it takes. You know, and if you don't want to charge the women, you don't charge the women. You know, how can people tell you what the fuck to do?
Well, I think they're saying it's like discrimination.
Right.
What do you think? Do you think that they have a case?
I don't think it's discrimination. Do I think they have a case? Probably. There's too much politically correct shit going on right now. But, you know, I don't think it's illegal. I don't see that. You know, I mean, I don't
like
to
me, like it sounds
fact.
Like more like irritated guys that are like, we don't want to pay. It's not fair.
Yeah, I mean,
it sounds,
you know,
more like they're upset.
Yeah. But, I mean, the guys are being used, too. That's what I'm saying. You know, I mean, they have to pay just to be able to meet women there. And, you know, and if the women don't have to pay, I can see where they're coming from, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I don't see that you can tell a business how to conduct it. Simply don't go if you don't like it.
I'm kind of with you on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. It's like, let people do their business how they want to do it. I mean,
yeah.
But then when it gets to places like you're standing in line and what if people can't come in because they don't look a certain way?
Yeah. Well, that's discrimination, but
then
happens all
but,
the time.
But anything that's visual, okay, so let's say... They can argue that this is the weird part because these are patrons, not employees.
Mm-hmm.
Like certain companies will hire people based or not hire people based on their image because it doesn't represent their brand.
Right.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And you can kind of argue that is legal because they have to, the people promote them. You mm-hmm. know, like if you do promotional modeling, you know, there's jobs I'm going to get. There's jobs I'm not going to get, you know?
Right.
And it's about the way I look. Again, it's a modeling element, but it's not like I'm a model. It's more, you know, spokes kind of modeling where you're really kind of looking like the brand and you're promoting the brand. You're like an extension of them.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to represent, you know, what it is you're doing. So if you take that same kind of business structure and you apply it to patrons and you go, okay, we can't let these type of patrons in because they don't look like our...
Right.
Image.
That's discrimination.
Discrimination. Okay.
I have to agree, you know. But at the same time, I can see where clubs would want only beautiful people there. So they can draw more people.
Well, just go in a freaking science lab and genetically engineer everybody that you want to look the way you want them to look and be boring.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's very superficial, but what are you going to do? You know, I mean, that's where we live. That's the world we live in.
Yeah, it's weird because I was on a call yesterday with this guy that I might be doing some work for. And he made the comment, not just the comment, he actually explained it. He's like, yeah, well, you're really attractive. I think it'd be a great fit for this and this. He's like, we just, you know, not to be rude, but we just don't want ugly people. He's like, I'm like, why are we having a conversation about this? Like, he's like, we just don't want ugly people doing this. It just doesn't work as well. We need really attractive women. So, you know, it works out really great. You're very confident and we just don't want ugly people.
Right.
And I thought to me, I was like, you know, keep that, you know, if you want to say I'm attractive, that's fine, but keep that whole thing in your head. Mm. We don't, because to me it represents who you are as a person.
But it's obvious. I mean, people want to look at beautiful people. That's why.
It's obvious. So
on TV and movies and shit like that. I mean, even in the reality shows, they pick out the attractive people because nobody wants to look at ugly people.
But the reality is that, you know what? It's doing a lot of people a disservice because some of the because a lot of times don't be fooled. Like, just because you cast all pretty people doesn't mean you're gonna have a great show.
Right.
Doesn't mean you're gonna be great actors. Doesn't mean it's gonna sustain itself. I mean, if you look at the UK and a lot of their shows, I mean, they've had a lot of success with their shows, and their actors are very much, I wouldn't say necessarily unattractive, but they're very real looking people.
Right.
You know, they don't cover up everything. They don't look perfect. But because of that, there's kind of this deeper connection that people can have with the characters and more relatability. And sometimes the lack of vanity can cause for better acting too. And I just think that, you know, we're a little stupid if we think that everything that's pretty and glossy is going to be so much better. I think it's just flashier.
But that's what the entertainment's about. That's what
society is about, entertainment. So, I mean, I'm just saying, just because you have pretty people doesn't mean it's entertaining. It's eye-catching.
No, it doesn't mean it's entertaining.
That's my
but
point.
They're attempting to, at least.
So. Yeah, they're attempting, but it's not always you know, knocking it out of the park because you get pretty people.
Yeah, well,
you know?
Yeah, I think it's pretty obvious, but I agree with you. So we got a 3-day weekend. Do you got any big plans, or are you going to stick around?
I've got a couple little gigs lined up this weekend, so I'll be probably kind of working.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, hopefully.
Congratulations.
Shall
Is
not
it
divulge.
In town, or do you have to drive all the way to Honolulu?
Honolulu. Oh, I'd love to drive to Honolulu.
Yeah.
Be great.
Except you can't. You gotta take a plane.
No, it's in town. It's here. The mean streets of Hollywood.
Mean streets of Hollywood.
Yeah, mean streets, the crazy streets
of fire.
Yeah. So.
Okay, well, sounds good, man. I'm looking forward to having a great
weekend.
What
are you gonna
do? Well, you know me. I mean, I don't go out of town when everybody else is.
Do you remember that little snippet that we have is like, Mr. Back Home Yard Vacationer?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
when everybody's
staycation.
Staycation. He's like, when everybody's like leaving, you stay and send a postcard from your den.
Yeah.
I was like, that is so you. You always talk about, oh, what can we do?
I love travel. It's just that it gets on my nerves sometimes, you know? There's too much going on.
Like, when's the last time you traveled, you know?
What's the last time I traveled?
When's the last time you traveled?
When? I just came back from Israel a couple months ago, remember?
Oh, yeah, that's true. That was a big one.
I had to deal with that, yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, the long flights and everything. Yeah. But at any rate, I'm not complaining. I mean, I'm really grateful for my life, and I think things are great. And even if I stick around over the weekend, it'll still be fun. We'll try and go to the beach or something.
I think it's time. Go to a good restaurant.
Right, before the summer's over.
Go to a good
restaurants we go to all the time. It's not a big deal.
You throwing up on the radio?
Yeah. No, I'm burping. All right, everybody. Thank you all for joining us. Have a great Labor Day weekend. Kara, you too. And stay out of trouble. And we'll see you here on... we're going to take Monday off, so we'll see you here on Tuesday. Have a great weekend.
You have been listening to Sam and Kara in the Morning, which airs every weekday from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time and originates from the Los Angeles Talk Radio studios. For questions regarding the show or to learn more about sponsorship opportunities, please direct all correspondents to info@latalkradio.com. Sam and Kara in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.